Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
Well, it passed almost entirely along partisan lines. The proponents of this bill said it was a reaction to a recent Texas law that would limit abortion to, well, about 6 weeks of gestation. What would this law called the Women's Health Protection Act actually do if it became law? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to talk about the U.S. House passage of the Women's Health Protection Act. Sarin Foster joins us. She's president of Feminists for Life of America and editor-in-chief of Women Deserve Better. Sarin, welcome back.
Thank you so much. It's such a privilege.
First of all, what do you make of the title of this bill that was recently passed by the U.S. House of Representatives, the Women's Health Protection Act?
Yeah, that's so misleading. It is really disingenuous and dangerous. This bill threatens the life of every unborn child and, by extension, their mothers, because abortion is, of course, never completely safe for women. It hurts women in so many different ways. But this bill has little to do with women's health. It has everything to do with abortion. It doesn't have anything to do with an elderly woman's health or prenatal care or labor and delivery or postnatal care for women. It is only about abortion, and abortion up until birth. It is the most extreme and dangerous bill that Congress, in my estimation, has ever passed on the issue of abortion.
So talk about what it would do if it became law. What would it actually do to existing laws? What would it do? What would it require?
This is so draconian. It would override any past or present or future pro-life laws, both at the state and federal levels. Can you imagine this? You know, no teenage parental right to know or parental consent laws, no prevention of late-term abortions, no prevention of babies feeling pain during the dismemberment process, no protection for babies that are diagnosed with Down syndrome. Not even gender-based abortions would be illegal in this country. It also, you know, I think it's important that we know that it disproportionately affects black women and other women of color who have the highest rates of abortion in this country. Most abortions are performed on the poorest among us, and it solves absolutely nothing. So if this bill is passed by the Senate, and it's right on the edge of doing so, it would put so much pressure, more pressure on women than they do now, than offer real relief and holistic solutions that you would think, because of this women's health protection, you know, kind of language, you would think that it would be helpful to women. It's absolutely not. It is all about pressuring women and not giving solutions to those who are at highest risk of abortion, especially those who are in poverty.
Why were all but one of the House Democrats so anxious to pass this bill?
I think they're not only afraid of the Texas law that you just mentioned, but also the case that's going to be heard by the Supreme Court on December 1st. Dobbs versus Jackson. This is about a law that was passed in Mississippi that would stop abortions that are after 15 weeks of a baby's gestation. And so this is another bill that they're very, very concerned about, because that law, if Dobbs is heard and the Supreme Court sides with the Mississippi Attorney General, it could actually undermine Roe v. Wade in another way. So these two bills, and there are other states that are dealing with heartbeat legislation laws, they're all seeing this come at them. So they want to try to take out all the protections all at once. It will also stop anybody who's got a religious belief that should have an exception to be forced to perform abortions. They can be coerced into participating or performing an abortion against their will. And that's really a bridge too far, even for Senator Collins from Maine, who has a history of being very much in support of abortion. Even that's a bridge too far for her. So this is really hanging in the balance on the Senate side now.
So go into a little more detail on what it would require of healthcare workers there, as you mentioned. Would it essentially remove any avenue toward a conscience exception?
Yes. That's the short answer. It would. The religious protection for people who have consciences that say they do not want to participate in abortion, they will lose that. This is the most severe shot against pro-lifers that I know of during my time at Feminists for Life. It's more challenging than Casey versus Planned Parenthood or anything else that I've heard of. It's really, really terribly frightening.
Do you think that the advocates of abortion, especially in the U.S. House, have overplayed their hand with this particular bill?
Well, I guess we will see. You know, obviously, votes have consequences, and there are elections coming up in the not-too-distant future. And I think the majority of people in this country do not like late-term abortions. It just gives most normal people the creeps for a good reason. It is evil. It is just absolutely harmful to women. If you know anything about performing a late-term abortion on a woman to mechanically force her to deliver early or to dismember that baby and take it out or have the baby come out backwards and stab it in the back of the head. And I'm sorry for people that have had an abortion and are listening to this, and maybe it's extremely upsetting to them, but even more upsetting would be if this goes through on the Senate side. Right now, there are two people that this entire bill depends upon. We need Senator Casey and Senator Murkowski to vote against this bill, or else evil wins in this situation, and it will be so serious it won't matter what happens at the Supreme Court.
Does it really actually come down to just two votes in the U.S. Senate?
So far, that's what it says, unless somebody changes their mind. Senator Manchin will vote with the pro-life side, as I understand it. But, you know, you need 51 votes when you've got a 50-50 Senate. And obviously the vice president, if she was a tiebreaker, would vote the wrong way. So you need one of these two, either a Republican, Senator Murkowski, or a Democrat, Senator Casey. We know what his father would have done. Governor Casey would definitely have voted on the pro-life side. We hope his son, you know, walks in his footsteps on this bill especially. There can be nothing more draconian than to eliminate every protection for women and children from abortion.
So is there any doubt in your mind, Sarah, whether or not President Biden, if it made it through the Senate, would sign it into law?
Unfortunately, I have no doubt that he would sign it. I wish that I could say otherwise, but I don't see any signal from him that he would ever stop anything about abortion at this point in time. It's a great disappointment. I can't, you know, if the early American feminists were around right now, I mean, you would have women in the streets, along with the media, along with the medical professions, all saying no to this, no to abortion. That's what they said, and now you have the media, people who call themselves feminists, and the mainstream medical profession supporting abortion. Everything is upside down, and we need to get it back, and we can get it back. It's really important for people to reach Senator Murkowski and Casey at this time and affirm to Senator Manchin, you know, in your nationwide network of people who listen, to not just sit there and be frustrated, but actually make a phone call or email these senators and strongly encourage their support for the pro-life side, for women and children, because women and children deserve better than abortion. And I don't see anything worse than if this thing gets passed. There will be so much more pressure on pregnancy resource centers if this gets passed also, because women, where will women go to get help? You know, with even more pressure coming from the government, affirming that you can have an abortion all the way through 9 months of pregnancy, really? I have a governor, and I'm so ashamed of living in Virginia with a governor who believes that a woman can make a decision about a baby after they're born. I mean, we're getting to that point now, you know, that we do not value life from the moment of conception. And I it's really chilling to me to think about all these losses that we have experienced over the last, you know, almost 50 years. We deserve better.
What have we learned about the lengths that pro-abortion representatives and senators are willing to go with the passage of H.R. 3755.
They'll do anything. Anything and everything. Evil is smart, and we have to be smarter. This is the most extreme, dangerous bill, And they purposefully, disingenuously name these bills so that, you know, people think it's one thing when it's actually the opposite. So we can't let them get away with this. I think, you know, Feminists for Life did a lot to, I think, to help raise the alarms that people on the Hill were telling to all the different pro-life groups to really focus on this. And I appreciate so much that you're, you know, taking the time to talk about this. We have time to reach those senators, and that's what the most urgent thing. I mean, everything depends upon this right now.
Finally then, Sarah, we are constantly told that abortion is pro-woman. Is that true?
Absolutely not. Women want to, in so many cases, refuse to choose. If you look at the reasons why women have abortions in this country, and this is research done by the former research arm of Planned Parenthood, the Guttmacher Institute, most of the people who have abortions are poor in this country. Most are minority. Many have more than one children already, and they don't know how to feed the next child. We have documented so many stories of women who've died from abortion, and they're not happy stories. They're terrible stories. Cree Williams died, you know, on her son's first birthday. So she got pregnant again, and she went off and had an abortion. I believe it was in Michigan, and she died. I mean, she died. This young woman is dead for nothing. I mean, there are so many stories of women and teenage girls having abortions, and nobody seems to care from the abortion, quote-unquote, right side of it. When teenage girls and young women die from abortion, they just say, oh, well, it's a medical procedure. Sometimes women die. They pretend it's safer to have an abortion than it is to give birth, and that is another disingenuous twist that they put on this issue. There are so many things that are built on lies that it'll be safe, it'll be rare, you know. I mean, it's the only thing true is it's legal. I cannot believe that in this country where we have enshrined in the Declaration of Independence the right to life as well as the pursuit of happiness. I mean, how can you pursue happiness when abortion's part of your story as a nation, when you've got millions of dead children in this country, and we will never know what they will contribute, but we will never know what those girls and those women would have contributed either if they were able to live and if they were supported in the way that they needed to be. We have to get the message out while all this is happening that we have thousands of pregnancy resource centers still wanting to help every woman that needs help, whether their husband has lost a job and maybe he's feeling like he can't support a child or another child, or a woman's been sexually assaulted, or whatever the situation is. Teenager has made a decision that wasn't in her best interest, and she finds that she is pregnant. Whomever it is, we need to make sure that every one of them knows that there's, you know, pregnancy resource centers, and also we have a help site called womendeservebetter.com. It's not a place for debate. It is only there to help her through all of her stages of life, because so many women have abortions later in life, too, now. Maybe it's a surprise baby. Maybe this year her health is threatened during that time. She doesn't know what to do. She doesn't know where to go for help. The pregnancy resource centers are there for her, and we have to make sure that every woman knows that there are thousands of these centers, but millions of people backing them up, perfect strangers who love unconditionally, and I know a lot of them are right now listening to you.
Sarah Foster is president of Feminists for Life of America. She's editor-in-chief of Women Deserve Better. You will find a link to Feminists for Life and all their resources at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Sarah, thank you very much.
And thank you.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Peter Bender. It'll be part 6 of our series on the theology of worship. Stay tuned. Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc. For your next family vacation, consider our beach house, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.